Hello and a warm welcome to this bonus episode of the EMG Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Sack here, and today I'm pleased to present an episode that's been sponsored by Novartis and will explore the disease myelodysplastic syndrome, otherwise known as MDS. Hosting the discussion today is the excellent Dr. Julia Duffy, a freelance market access consultant and the Director of Medical Education Strategy for Infectious Diseases at Medscape WebMD. Dr. Duffy is joined by two experts in the field of MDS, Dr. Esther Oliva from the Great Metropolitan Hospital BMM in Italy, and Dr. David Valcarcel from Val de Hebron University Hospital in Spain. Together, they're going to expand on the initial data regarding immunotherapy for the treatment of MDS, which was presented virtually at the European School of Hematology, or ESH, as well as discuss management of intermediate and high-risk patients, whilst exploring exciting new data on novel immunotherapies. It's a fantastic evaluation and conversation, so please sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Hello, welcome everybody to our podcast entitled Emerging Immunotherapies for Patients with Myelodysplastic Syndrome. I'm joined today by Dr. Esther Oliva and Dr. David Valcarcel. Welcome. Could you please tell me a little bit about yourselves and your affiliations? Esther, I'll start with you. Thank you.
Yes, I'm a hematologist from southern Italy, Reggio Calabria, from the Grande Ospedale Metropolitano. And I'm mainly treating patients with myeloid neoplasms, acute myeloid leukemia, and myelodysplastic syndromes.
I'm David. I'm working in Barcelona in Hospital Vall d'Hebron in Spain. And I'm also treating patients with MDS and also acute myeloid leukemia. I'm currently the director of the transplant and cellular therapy in our hospital.
Thank you both. So I'll put my first question to Esther, if that's okay. So Esther, in your clinical practice, how do you determine if a patient with MDS is either low risk, intermediate risk, and high risk? Thank you.
So now MDS is classified according to the IPSS revised classification. So a proper basic workup is required to approximate prognosis according to the classification. We need a complete blood count to assess the number of cytopenias, bone marrow morphology to count blasts, and then cytogenetics to assign a cytogenetic risk. And the classification divides patients into very low and low, which we would call low risk, intermediate risk, and then high and very high risk, which would be a high risk category.
Thank you, Esther. David, how do you determine it the same way, or is there any other additional things you do in your clinical practice?
Well, we mainly do the same as Esther just mentioned. Perhaps I would say that we consider most patients in the intermediate risk group as higher. Most of them, we consider them as higher risk group. And in the last 2 years, we are trying to incorporate into the prognosis stratification also some data coming from next-generation sequencing, although this is still to be validated, of course.
Thank you, David. So, David, what are the current clinical challenges in the management of patients with intermediate, or as you categorise those as high-risk, those high-risk patients with the current standard of care, please?
Okay, I think that we have several clinical needs or challenges in this kind of patients. By now, we are only using hypomethylating agents for most of the patients, and although it was a step forward 10 years ago, I think that we need to improve a lot to obtain better and deeper responses. I think that also it's very important for those patients who can be candidate for allogeneic stem cell transplantation to obtain a negativization of minimal residual disease. So I think that in the MDS setting, we have an important work to do still. What do you think about this, Esther?
Yes, I agree that this is one of the major challenges, is to prolong the response and prolong survival. Because yes, we have achieved something with azacitidine alone. And there's also another problem with azacitidine. It is prescribed in Europe according to the IPSS classification. So there are some patients that, as you say, are in the intermediate risk category that are actually high risk. And we are unable to give even azacitidine to an intermediate one risk patient that is actually a high risk for the IPSS revised. We are unable to achieve long-term survival, and almost every patient will actually experience mortality due to either acute myeloid leukemia or the complications of high-risk MDS associated also with adverse events of prolonged treatment. So we do still need something to improve the standard of care of higher-risk patients.
Thank you, Esther. And that takes us nicely on. Esther, if you could give us the rationale of using therapies that target the immune system for the treatment of MDS. For example, is the use of monoclonal antibodies the next step in MDS therapy?
Oh, well, we have already had some small experience in a way with lenalidomide in low-risk patients because it has direct effects on the MDS clone. It also has immunomodulatory effects. And this drug has improved hematopoietic capacity in the bone marrow of patients with MDS with Del5q low-risk disease. And it has been associated with a particularly favorable and prolonged outcome. We have numerous somatic mutations that distinguish MDS. So our next step is using immunotherapy together with azacitidine, without having to increase the treatment emergent adverse events, because we're dealing with generally a frail population. So many monoclonal antibodies are being now explored, and these are immune checkpoint inhibitors. And we have seen some efficacy with pembrolizumab, which is an inhibitor of PD-1, and ipilimumab, which is inhibiting CTLA-4. And they have shown efficacy and some additional adverse events, whereas durvalumab, which is another PD-L1 inhibitor, doesn't seem to show any advantage when combined to azacitidine. We also have seen some results with the CD47 inhibitor, which is CD47 is expressed on the tumor cells as a macrophage immune checkpoint. And blocking this signal with magrolimab does give very good results that we have seen in preliminary data. So another target could be the TIM-3, which is another emerging target in immunotherapy. So I think we're on our way to try to improve the immune response and target the stem cell with the TIM-3. So, David, maybe you would like to add something. I spoke quite roughly about many of these immunotherapeutic drugs. So maybe you can add on something.
I think that you summarize really the evidence we have. And I perhaps the only thing that I can add is that this approach integrating immune drugs in the therapy of MDS is also interesting because the side effects are not accumulative to those that we have with azacitidine or many other drugs. So I think that the combination of these new drugs can be very well tolerated in our patients. The initial results from the studies in integrating anti-PD-1 or anti-CTLA-4 also suggested that there were not important increase in autoimmune complications, and initial results with sabatolimab were also quite optimistic without important toxicity. So I think that perhaps this kind of drugs will be in the next years in combination with some other treatments that we are now developing.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Esther. So sabatolimab is currently being assessed in clinical trials for the management of patients with high-risk MDS. Could you please tell me what it is and what the mechanism of action is?
Yes, sabatolimab is a new drug. In fact, this is the first drug targeting specifically TIM-3. And this is a really interesting target. I think that we can separate the activity of sabatolimab in two ways. The first is that TIM-3 is overexpressed in the stem cell, in leukemic stem cells. So with the monoclonal antibody against TIM-3, we are going to selectively targeting these leukemic stem cells. So we are directly attacking the neoplastic clone. In the other hand, TIM-3 is a very important regulator of immunity. So we can release the break of an immune system and enhance immune response with sabatolimab. And I think that this dual mechanism of action is one of the most important characteristics of sabatolimab. Perhaps, Esther, you can further comment on this.
Yes, the other point is that TIM-3 is expressed in the leukemic stem cells and in the MDS stem cells, but TIM-3 is not expressed on normal hematopoietic stem cells. So it actually distinguishes these two sorts of stem cells, and the attack is on the clone and not on normal hematopoietic stem cells. And I think this is quite important. So that means that sabatolimab is not hitting the normal hematopoiesis. And since TIM-3 is overexpressed and it also promotes a stimulatory loop, it supports the clonal selection of such leukemic stem cells and they outgrow the normal ones. So sabatolimab has a very specific target and it actually spares the normal hematopoiesis.
Thank you, Esther. So you've actually covered my next question, which is why this is a novel approach. So I'm going to move forward and ask you, what makes sabatolimab different from the available therapies or those in late-stage clinical trials? Esther, if you could answer that question for us, please.
Yes. So well, we did talk a bit about it. So the difference is that it actually is targeting leukemic stem cells and enhancing the immune surveillance and does both of these. And this is different from other immune checkpoint molecules that are scarcely expressed on the leukemic blasts. And like I already said, the difference is also that it does not target or damage the normal hematopoietic stem cells. And so this makes sabatolimab probably a safer drug compared to others and probably will show that it has less toxicity.
I think that this is a very important point because as many of the patients that we are treating are older and frail, it's very important to avoid the addition of toxicity. And we know that although azacitidine is the standard of treatment and we can deliver this treatment to most of our patients, it's also true that when we try to add a new drug to azacitidine, we have had in the past many problems with toxicity. So in this setting, I agree with you, Esther, that the lack of toxicity from sabatolimab is really very important for future combinations.
Thank you, David. I mean, we've touched a little bit about the safety and the tolerability. What's the data look like in terms of efficacy and response for your patients? Esther, if you'd like to take that first, please.
Yes. So we have some trial data that have been presented of sabatolimab with the hypomethylating agent, decitabine or azacitidine. And the overall response rate is more than 60%, which is higher than hypomethylating agent alone. The safety profile is impressive. It does not seem to add toxicity. And many patients did not just have a marrow response, but they also had a hematological response with improved blood cell counts, which probably translates into less time needed in the clinic for transfusions. And again, that would translate into a better quality of life, I guess. What do you say, David, about this?
With the results that we have with the combination of hypomethylating agents plus sabatolimab, although they are somehow preliminary, they are quite promising. And now is the phase 3 is ongoing, comparison with monotherapy. And of course, we need to wait, but I'm somehow I'm optimistic regarding the results.
Thank you, David. David, was there anything that was surprising in these clinical trials or really did interest you about the data?
Well, I think that there are some interesting aspects that in the trial that we just mentioned. From my point of view, one of the most important and interesting aspects is the equilibrium between toxicity and efficacy. This was the first drug targeting TIM3, and we were somehow afraid of possible immune-related complications, and the trial didn't show an important increase in immune-related complications. So this was a very good news and very important for the development of this molecule. In the other hand, the efficacy, although the results that we have now are really preliminary, seems to suggest that there is some activity in the combination. And thus, I think that this will be a very important drug to combine with other treatments. We will probably have in the next future two drugs approved in the MDS setting, like pevonedistat, luckily, and why not also venetoclax. And I think that sabatolimab can be a good partner for a future triplet in this kind of patients.
Thank you, David. Esther, is there anything that you were really interested about regarding these data?
Okay, I was definitely surprised about the adverse events, okay, because we didn't observe adverse events that were increased with the combination. But I was also impressed that many of these patients did have unfavorable mutations like TP53 and ASXL1. We still don't know exactly how this drug will work in this subset of patients. They did comprise some of these patients that were included in the trial. And they were also around 70, so they were a typical MDS population with unfavorable mutations.
Thank you, Esther. And that actually takes us nicely on to the clinical trial patient population. I mean, were they very old? Were they, you know, is this an agent for everybody with MDS, high risk or intermediate risk MDS? Or is there a specific patient population that it seems to be particularly efficacious in? David, please.
Well, the population that was included in the trial was representative of MDS patients. Median age was around 70, if I'm not wrong, and most of the patients were with high and very high disease. So the population was really representative and a bad prognosis population. As Esther mentioned, many of the patients harbor extremely high risk mutations as TP53, and thus this was a really unfavorable population. Perhaps the other thing that we can mention is that with the limitations of the short follow-up of this initial study, the durability of the responses was also quite promising. And I think that this is another important aspect, as we mentioned in the beginning of this talk, that we realize that we need to prolong the response of our patients.
Esther, have you got anything to add to the patient population? I mean, we could take this a little bit further. So, for example, you know, when it does become available, would you use it in all of your intermediate and high-risk patients?
Oh, I think it's quite a good drug. And if you're using it every 4 weeks, it's just one infusion. And I think that if it's going to not add toxicity and favor hematological response and remissions and improve survival, I think it should become standard of care.
Again, I see you've sort of taken the words out of my mouth. So we were going to look at how it would fit into the standard of care or the treatment pathway. So, for example, would you use it in combination with hypomethylating agents or other therapies such as venetoclax? David, how would you potentially use this therapy in your clinical practice when it becomes available?
Yes, as Esther mentioned, we are facing probably a changing in the standard of care of our patients that is based on as a sighting until now, but probably this will change in the next future, and we will be treating patients with combinations of two or even three drugs. And in this setting, sabatolimab can be a very attractive drug in the doublet or triplets because of the profile of efficacy and safety, and also very importantly because the mechanism of action is different to the other drugs that we are using. So I think that probably it can be incorporated into the standard of care treatment in MDS patients, from patients in the intermediate to the very high risk as IPSSR.
Esther, if you'd like to take that question further, please.
Yes, I think we don't really know today what will be the winner of the doublet, okay? Because David mentioned we're going towards doublet and triplet therapy. But I can imagine sabatolimab easily being a partner for any doublet, or just be azacitidine plus itself. But I'm saying that if we get other combinations that are favorable, it can be a partner for any doublet, as it doesn't seem to add toxicity, and it has mechanisms of action that should not interfere. At least we postulate that it should not interfere with other mechanisms of action. So let's say we still don't know whether venetoclax and azacitidine as a doublet, if it'll be on the market. We need still to establish a very safe dose of venetoclax. But once established, then you can even add sabatolimab, and I don't imagine it adding any toxicity, and it might confer a longer survival or higher response rate. I think that the clinical trials will help answer the question, but it's an amazing partner for any treatment, I think, in MDS.
Thank you, Esther. I mean, that's really lovely to hear, actually. So finally, you know, we've got to think about the patients. So David, what do you think would be the clinical implications for patients with MDS?
Well, patients and doctors treating these patients with MDS, we are waiting for new options to improve results. We were talking about these new combinations to obtain better and safe treatments. And I think that perhaps we will also have the opportunity to use these drugs in the context of allogeneic stem cell transplantation, because these drugs can be really helpful to avoid relapse after transplant. So we will be treating differently these patients in the next 5 years, and these are good news for all the patients' community of MDS. Yes.
Thank you, David. And Esther, you mentioned earlier about the quality of the life and for patients with fewer transfusions. Again, how do you think like the future looks like for patients in terms of their clinical implications, their quality of life, please?
I think that whatever therapeutics are coming along, it is really compulsory that it abides to the rules of maintaining or improving quality of life. So sabatolimab does not seem to add toxic effects, so it doesn't decrease quality of life. If it does give better response rate, patients will live longer and probably a better life. We already see this with azacitidine alone. Those patients that have hematological improvements and are in remission actually get back to their normal lives, even if it's for a short time only. So I can imagine any drug that will prolong survival without impacting the quality of their lives and improving hematological responses will probably provide longer quality life.
Finally, what I do in every podcast is ask our experts to look into the future. So David, could you please look into your crystal ball and predict what the treatment and the landscape of MDS will look like in, say, 2 to 5 years' time? Thank you.
Good question. I think that we will be incorporating data from molecular studies to decide which kind of treatment we are going to offer our patients. I think that the treatment will be based in two or even three drugs initially to obtain the best response possible. And I also think that we will be evaluating the response more often and probably changing treatments if we are not obtaining a good response. Until now, the only option that we have is start hypomethylating agents and we just continue them because we don't have any other option. I think that in the next years, we will be having like 3 to 5 different drugs. So we will be able to choose different options and we'll, of course, use them all in the treatment of our patients.
Thank you, David. Esther, again, could you look into your crystal ball and sort of predict the future for me, please?
Well, I agree with David that we will be adding drugs and we'll be giving a sort of induction with maybe a triplet. And then I think we should be looking into maintenance and according to whether there is a specific mutation, we might continue maintenance with an inhibitor. But I think that sabatolimab would have a role in maintaining patients after transplantation, for example, as the leukemic stem cells or the MDS clones that do reappear overexpress TIM3 or do express TIM3. And it could also have an enhanced immunological effect. So I could see it as a post-transplant maintenance treatment. And it could fit into certain patients with certain characteristics as maintenance after having received a marrow remission and a hematological remission, as it does not seem to weigh too much on patients' lives having an infusion once a month to maintain their response. But I think this all should be still to be established after I look into my crystal ball.
Esther or David, if you would like to add anything else, you know, what you see in your clinical practice, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
What I would add is that I think TIM3 would represent a beautiful marker for to distinguish leukemic stem cells from the normal stem cells. We're still having some trouble in the clinics and the labs sometimes to distinguish such cells. So should TIM3 become part of a laboratory assessment, it would become very useful, not only for targeted therapy, but also for diagnostic purposes.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Esther and David, I'd like to thank you so much for your time and expertise today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that concludes an insightful discussion on myelodysplastic syndrome. I hope you found that as valuable and interesting as I did. Thank you to Dr. Julia Duffy for leading the discussion and to our two key opinion leaders, Dr. Esther Oliva and Dr. David Valcarcel, for both their time and for sharing their insights. If you liked this episode, please don't forget to subscribe to the EMG Health Podcast. We have new episodes out each Friday, plus plenty of bonus episodes just like this one. So be sure to tune in again wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for this week, but please do take care and bye for now.